Today we're in 2 Samuel 18, and we're looking at set for victory. You know, last week David and his retinue and some of his soldiers had, and their wives and children, they had to flee from Jerusalem. They're having a civil war. David's son Absalom has taken over the capital, Jerusalem. And David has had to flee over the Jordan. He's out here in the wilderness, and they're being sustained by loyal local people. But it really doesn't look good. Ever since David sinned with Bathsheba, they've been kind of on a downward slope. First, the division came in his family, and now it's spread to the whole country. And there's a civil war going, being led by David's son, Absalom. And Absalom has got a very, very large army drawn from the northern tribes of Israel. David has a smaller army, and he's had to flee for his life, and that's where we're taking it up. The first section here in 18, chapter 18 of 2 Samuel, has to do with a military victory. It says, David numbered the people who were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. He's organizing the men into what we would call regiments and companies, captains of hundreds, captains of thousands. Then David sent out one-third of the people under the hand of Joab. Now Joab's a general. One-third under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one-third under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. Now, these would be the brigade commanders. So he's got three generals under him. And those generals have colonels and captains and groups of men. All right? So he's organized his army, and he said, and the king said to the people, I also will surely go out with you myself. This is a fight for his life, and David is going to lead the troops in person. All right? Is that a good idea? What happens if he goes out? He could get killed. So I would say, myself, he'd probably be better off staying back in the rear and letting the army go out. In fact, that's what everybody's saying. He said, I will also surely go out with you myself. Now he's trying to get a unified group. And the people answered, you shall not go out. If we flee away, in other words, if our army scatters, they won't care about us. Nor if half of us die, will they care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us now, for you are now more help to us in the city. Then the king said to them, whatever seems best to you, I will do. So the king stood beside the gate. And all the people, that we're talking about the army here, went out by hundreds and by thousands. All right? So you've got all the troops. Now they're divided into three parts. Each part would be under a general. Now the king had commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai. Who are they? Those are the generals. He had commanded them, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. He doesn't want Absalom to be harmed or killed. He says it to his general. This is a direct order from the king. And all the people, that means the army, they're standing around. They hear him say this to the general. Directly from the king. Deal gently with the young man Absalom. Notice he doesn't call him my son. And all the people heard when the king gave the captains orders concerning Absalom. So the people went out into the field of battle against Israel, and the battle was in the wilderness of Ephraim, the woods of Ephraim. Now, we think that that's up here, the woods of Ephraim, is in this general vicinity. David's men are outnumbered. And one of the ways that you can fight and defeat a larger group is to fight in the wilderness. There was a Civil War battle where General Grant outnumbered General Lee, and General Lee fought him in the wilderness. And because they were in such thick woods, his Grant's numerical superiority was nullified. He couldn't maneuver in as well. And so it's what David's doing here too. He's fighting in a wilderness area to nullify Absalom's superiority in numbers. All right? So the people went out into the field of battle against Israel. Now Israel, those northern 10 tribes under Absalom that are fighting against David. The people of Israel were overthrown there before the servants of David, and a great slaughter of 20,000 took place there that day. For the battle there was scattered over the face of the whole countryside, and the woods devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. It was a wilderness area, and a lot of those people died of exhaustion, and they died of heat stroke and lack of water. And so David's men win a battle against a superior force in the wilderness area. All right, so number one, military victory. Then Absalom, the number two, is the rebellion of Joab. One of David's generals goes rogue. Okay, now what had David told them? What had David told his three generals? Deal gently with the young man Absalom. All right, remember that. Yeah. Well, that's not what David meant. Because David's going to get very upset with this thing, the way it ensues. Then Absalom met up with the servants of David. All right, so Absalom is trying to escape the battlefield, and he runs up against David's men. Absalom rode on a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great terebinth tree. And his head, remember he had 5 pounds of hair? It symbolized his virility. And he got his hair caught in the branches of the tree. And so he was left hanging between heaven and earth. And the mule which was under him went on. Now he's in a bad way. The Bible says in Deuteronomy 21:23, cursed is everyone who hangs upon a tree. Absalom is suspended between heaven and earth, and he's surrounded by David's men. Alright? Now he's violated the law by sleeping with David's concubine. He has violated the law by lifting his hand against God's anointed, pride, and the list would go on. Now he's caught. Now a certain man saw it, which is one of the soldiers, and told Joab, and said, "I just saw Absalom hanging in the terebinth tree." Joab said to the man who told him, "You just saw him." What did Joab want? He wanted him to kill him. But that's not what David told Joab to do. "You just saw him. Why did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have given you 10 shekels of silver and a belt." Well, 10 shekels of silver in our currency would be about $1,280. And he would have gotten a military belt, a battle trophy. But the man said to Joab, "Though I were to receive 1,000 shekels of silver in my hand." Now, instead of 1,280, that would be $12,800. If you had given me 1,000 shekels of silver in my hand, I would not raise my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, saying, 'Beware lest anyone touch the young man.'" I heard it with my own ears. I wouldn't have done it. I would not have done it for 1,000 shekels. Otherwise, I would have dealt falsely against my own life. David would have had to kill him. "For there is nothing hidden from the king, and you yourself would have set yourself against me." David would have wanted him to be killed, and Joab would have been commanded to carry it out. And this guy says, I'm not going to do it. Then Joab said, "I cannot linger with you. I'm not to waste your time." And he took 3 spears in his hand and thrust them through Absalom's heart. While he was still alive in the midst of the terebinth tree, and 10 young men who bore Joab's armor. Now the general has a bodyguard, 10 men. Their armor there, and they protect him if he gets in a bad way in the battle. 10 young men who bore Joab's armor surrounded Absalom and struck and killed him. So they finished him off. So Joab blew the trumpet. He blew a signal on this ram horn, shofar. And the people returned from pursuing Israel, for Joab held back the people. In other words, he rallied the army to himself, and the battle was over, and they responded to the trumpet. And they took Absalom and cast him in a large pit in the woods, and laid a very large heap of stones over him. Then all Israel fled, everyone to his tent. This is the enemy army. They have been defeated in detail. They have scattered, and everybody goes back home, and they're trying to escape the slaughter. So the enemy, the rebellion, has been basically crushed and decapitated, and that's it. By the way, throwing Absalom in a pit, putting a pile of stones over it, is not honorable burial. What would honorable burial have been? To bury him with his family and gather him to his father. There would have been a memorial stone set up for here. Now, Absalom, during his lifetime, had taken and set up a memorial for himself, which is in the King's Valley. Now, that's the Kidron Valley. There is a monument there that's about four stories tall. It's called Absalom's Tomb, or the Tomb of Absalom. But it was not built by Absalom, and Absalom wasn't buried there. It's 24 feet square, 40 feet high, and it has a big hole inside because the Muslims over the centuries have been stoning it because Absalom was a rebellious son. So it was standing at the time of Jesus, but it dates from the first century A.D. It was erected at the time of Jesus. This is 1,000 years before that. So that is not the tomb of Absalom. We did find an inscription that Zacharias, father of God's death, may have been buried there, and also Simeon may have been buried there. Zacharias was buried for the Byzantine period of the Greek. It's an interesting place. If you can't get in, it's big. There are several that have been carved out of the stones in the Kidron Valley that have been there at the time of Jesus. So, Google those and you can see them. But that's not what we're talking about here. That one is no longer in existence. Now, Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up a pillar for himself, which is in the King's Valley. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. He called the pillar after his own name, and to this day it is called Absalom's Monument. So at the time of writing here, it was up and it was called Absalom's Monument. Right? Point number three. The news of victory comes to David. Now there's a problem here because Absalom has been killed in defiance. David's order. Whoever tells David that news might be in danger. Okay? So then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. Now, you may recall that David had placed spies and runners in the city when Absalom was controlling the palace. And Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, was of the priestly lineage. Zadok was a royal priest, and they had brought the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem, but David kind of set up a spy network, and he was one of the runners. Then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said, let me run now and take the news to the king how the Lord has avenged him of his enemy. That's good news. What's the problem? Well, what if he says that Absalom has been killed? He might be killed. I think Joab is trying to spare his life. He doesn't want him to bring that news to the king. He doesn't want the king to get the bad news first. He doesn't know what Ahimaaz is saying. So he doesn't want him to go. Joab doesn't. For whatever reason, Joab said to him, you shall not take the news this day, for you shall take the news another day. But today you will take no news, because the king's son is dead. Then Joab said to the Cushite. Now, this Cushite is a foreigner, and Joab's willing, I guess, to sacrifice him in case David gets mad. Joab said to the Cushite, go tell the king what you have seen. All right. So Ahimaaz wants to take the news, but he won't let him. Cushite wants, he says to Cushite, direct order from the general, you go and tell the king what you've seen. So the Cushite bowed himself to Joab and ran. Now, the Cushite is going a route that requires him to run over the mountains. going up and down. Okay? And any of you done mountain biking? That slows you down. Because you're doing the up and down thing. Right? And Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said again to Joab, "Whatever happens, be that as it may, please let me also run after the Cushite." So, you know, the message will be sure to get to David. So Joab said, "Why will you run, my son, since you have no news ready? You have nothing to tell. But whatever happens," he says, "let me run. Be that as it may." Literally in Hebrew it says, "be what may." It's almost exactly in English. "Be that as it may. Let me run." So he said to him, "All right, run." So Ahimaaz ran by way of the plain. Now he's going the flat way. Cushite's going up and down. Who's going to get there first? Ahimaaz. Yeah. He's chosen a way that's a little bit longer, but it's flat. That's easy to run. And so, Ahimaaz ran by way of the plain and outran the Cushite. Now David was sitting between the two gates. He's in the city, and he's between the two gates. That's the protected part of the city wall. He's in a safe area. And the watchman went up to the roof over the gate. Went to the wall, lifted his eyes and looked, and there was a man running alone. Now, is this good news or bad news? You see one guy running from the battle area. Is that good news or bad news? Probably good news. Why? That's exactly right. If he saw thousands of people running in every which way, that would have been bad. One man running, that means the army is intact, and we've got a runner. So this is probably going to be good news. So David's looking for some encouragement. The watchman cried out and told the king. And the king said, "If he's alone, there's news in his mouth." And he came rapidly and drew near. Then the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman called to the gatekeeper, said, "There's another man running alone." And the king said, "He also brings news." This is so important. He's got a backup. So the watchman said, "I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok." Now, you got to remember, this is kind of a small town. Everybody knows everybody. I used to want to live in a small town. Because I grew up in a big city. Until I lived in a small town. And you sneeze and you've got 50 people say gazinta. You know, and it makes you nervous. And this guy recognizes Ahimaaz because of the way he runs. And he's right, too. The watchman said, I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. The king says, "Well, he's a good man. He comes with good news." David's looking for some good news here. So Ahimaaz called out and said to the king, "All is well." Actually, he says, "Peace be to you." What Jesus said. Shalom Aleichem. Then he bowed down with his face to the earth before the king and said, "Blessed be the Lord your God," YHWH, "who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king." What's happened to the enemy army? They've been defeated. Good news. We've won. And the king said, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" when Joab, Ahimaaz answered, well, when Joab, the king's servant, sent the king's servant and your servant, me, I saw a great tumult, but I didn't know what it was about. There was a big hubbub down there, but I didn't know what it was about. And he's telling the truth. The king said, turn aside and stand here. He wants to get the other half of the message. He's waiting. So he turned aside and stood still. Just then the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, there is good news, my lord the king. For the Lord has avenged you this day of all those who rose against you. So what we've got here, confirmation of the death. And the king said to Cushite, is the young man Absalom saved? So the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise against you to do harm be like that young man. Now this is... You know what a euphemism is? You're using a softer expression for something that would otherwise sound hard. It's like the captain of the Titanic thing. It just caused a little mistake on the line. And after he had said this, he fell asleep. You're substituting a soft expression. He says, I wish all the king's enemies would wind up like that young man. You know, what does that mean? It means he's beaten. And David, he knows exactly what this guy's saying. Well, he doesn't have him killed or anything, because this Cushite isn't the one who killed him. He doesn't come up bragging about it and expect him to be rewarded like that other guy who expected him to do it. David. All right, number four, David mourning. Then the king was deeply moved, and he went up to the chamber over the gate. Well, he's kind of between heaven and earth himself, and wept. And as he went, he said thus. Now, he's been calling after that young man. Now he says, oh, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. Oh, Absalom, my son. His heart's broken. Joab was told, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. Well, Joab's going to be a little torqued by this, because he's just won this great military victory. Now, David's crying for the guy who led the rebellion against him. David loved his enemies, like Jesus, when he was weeping over the Lord. So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard it, said that day, the king is grieved for his son. And the people snuck back into the city that day, as people who are ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. They didn't march in a victory parade back in all kind of back in the city, and everybody in the whole city was mourning, because the king was mourning. The king covered his face and cried out with a loud voice, oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son. 8 times he repeated, point number five, Joab's warning. Now, Joab kind of oversteps his authority. He rebukes David. Now, you can see his point. He's kind of warning David, because they brought David back into Jerusalem, but the situation is not totally stable. Things can still go south. And Joab is a strategist, and he's going to warn David. And I think he's going to kind of overstep his authority here, but he's concerned, all right? Then Joab came into the house to the king. Now, when it says into the house, it means the palace, and said, "Today you have disgraced all your servants who today have saved your life, the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives, and the lives of your concubines, in that you love your enemies and hate your friends. For you have declared today that you regard neither princes nor servants." Now, you remember when they came up to Jesus, "We know you don't respect people. You're not a respecter of men's person. You're a teacher who teaches the way in truth." They said the same thing about Jesus later on. And Jesus teaches, you've heard it said, "You shall love your friends and hate your enemies, but I say to you, love your enemies." That's exactly what David's doing here. "In that you have disgraced all your servants, in that you love your enemies and hate your friends. For you have declared today that you regard neither princes nor servants. For today I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all of us had died today, then it would have pleased you well. Now therefore arise, go out and speak comfort to your servants. Speak to the heart of your servants. For I swear by the Lord." Now this is real strong language. "I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, no one will stay with you this night. And that will be worse for you than all the evil that has befallen you from your youth until now. The army is going to desert you if you don't go out there and say something." Then the king arose and sat in the gate. Now, he's making himself available to the people. He's sitting in the gate. Somebody could try to assassinate him. So it's a little bit of risk. But he goes and he sits in the gate. And the people are down there with him. And they told all the people, saying, "There's the king sitting in the gate." So all the people came before the king, for every one of Israel had fled to his tent. So they all came back. Point number 6, King David's reinstatement, showing mercy to his enemies. Now, David has just won a decisive battle in the Civil War. What are you going to do with the enemy generals? What are you going to do with the enemy army? Well, traditionally, the enemy army would have been sold into slavery, and the enemy general would have been killed before the king. The Romans did that too. Guess what David's going to do? Anybody have an idea? What's he going to try? What's he going to see? He's going to seek reconciliation. Now all the people were in a dispute throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "The king has saved us from the hand of our enemies and delivered us from the hand of the Philistines, and now he has had to flee the land because of Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us," these are enemy troops, "has died in battle. Now, therefore, why do you say nothing about bringing back the king?" So King David sent to Zadok and Abiathar the priest, saying, "Speak to the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house? Since the words of all Israel have come to the king to his very house." The tribes of Israel are talking about reinstating the king, but Judah hadn't said anything about it. He's talking to Judah here. He says, "You are my brethren. You are my bone and my flesh. Why are you then the last to bring back the king? And say to Amasa." Now, Amasa was the enemy general, all right, under Absalom. "Are you not my bone and my flesh? God, do so to me and more also, if you are not the commander of the army before me continually, in place of Joab. Joab has disobeyed David. What did he do? He killed Absalom. I think David got wind of that. And David set Joab aside and makes the enemy commander, Amasa, the general of his army, which is a kind of risky thing to do. They say that when Douglas MacArthur was made the military governor of Japan after World War II, correct me if I'm wrong, he had the Japanese who were charged with keeping order in the city all standing there. They weren't heavily loaded with ammunition, but they were all armed. And he rode an open car in the city of Tokyo. Any one of them could have killed him. He did it because he respected them. And because he respected them, they gave him respect. And also they had to impose their influence on him. And so he did, that's a brave thing, riding an open car between two rows of armed Japanese. Anybody could have assassinated him. David is making the enemy general his own general and deposing Joab. Yeah, you keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. If anything is going on in the army, David is going to know about it. And so he swayed the hearts of all the men of Judah, just as the heart of one man, so that they sent this word to the king, return, you and all your servants. So even Judah is calling for his return. Then the king returned and came to the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to meet the king. Now, Gilgal is where Joshua had crossed the Jordan when he was about to fight Jericho. Do you remember Shimei? I call him Ernest T. Bass because he was throwing rocks at David and cursing him and throwing dust and making himself generally inconvenient. Well, he shows up. He thought David was going to be deposed and a Saulide would be replacing the king, or Absalom would be replacing the king. Now David's been reinstated as king. And what does Shimei think is going to happen to him? Yeah, I mean, he's cursed the king and done all this stuff. A lot of theatrics. Then Shimei, the son of Gera, Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, remember Ziba, he's the one that was watching out for Mephibosheth. Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, his 15 sons and 20 servants with him. He's a big guy in the area. Then they went over the Jordan before a king. Then a ferry boat went across to carry back the king's household and to do whatever he thought good. Now Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan. He said to the king, do not let my lord impute iniquity to me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take his heart. I didn't mean to throw all those rocks and all that dirt at you and say all those really bad things and call you the son of iniquity. All that. I didn't really mean it. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said, shouldn't this guy be put to death because he cursed the Lord's anointed? So these soldiers stand around, you know, we'll be glad to take care of this for you. And David said, what have I to do with you, son of Zeruiah, that you should be adversaries to me today? Shall any man be put to death today in Israel? I do not know For I do I not know that today I'm king over Israel? He's king over those tribes. Therefore, the king said to Shimei, you shall not die. And the king swore to him. Now, Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. Now, remember that Ziba had told David that Mephibosheth was in Jerusalem planning to take over. So he had given some bad intel and slander. There's a problem because Ziba had actually helped David with men. He brought all kinds of goods and things to keep them alive when they were going through some really bad territory. And so David has given Ziba all of Saul's property, taking it from Mephibosheth and giving it to him. And he has helped David. Can't forget that. What's David going to do next? Well, he had not cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed till the day he returned in peace. What does all that mean? He's been mourning, yeah. So it was, when he had come to Jerusalem to meet the king said to him, why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth? And he answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me. Now, who would that be? That'd be Ziba. For your servant said, that means I said, I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go to the king, because your servant is lame. And he, Ziba, has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God. Therefore, do what is good in your eyes. My future is in your hands, David. For all my father's house were but dead men before there's a dead man walk. Before my lord the king, now some of them were dead men dead. Yet you set your servant among those who eat at your own table. You showed grace. You didn't have to. Therefore, what right have I to complain anymore to the king? My life's in your hands. So the king said to him, why do you speak any more of your matters? I've said, you and Ziba divide the land. So he's given Mephibosheth half of the inheritance of Saul, Ziba the other half. Ziba helped David when he was in the wilderness. He helped sustain his troops and his family. Mephibosheth has not fought his rebellion against him, so he splits it up. Then Mephibosheth said to the king, brother, let him take it all. I'm not in it for the property. I'm not in it for the money. But he's going to get half anyway. Inasmuch as my lord the king has come back in peace to his own house, Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, I'm just glad to see you back. If Ziba wants it all, he can have it. Barzillai, the Gileadite, came down from Rogelim and went across the Jordan with the king to escort him across the Jordan. Now, this guy's 80 years old, right? And he is an old guy, and he wanted to help David get across, but he's not planning on going with him. Now, Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old, and he had provided the king with supplies while he stayed at Mahanaim. You know, the last of the last week's lesson where I said it was kind of like the 23rd Psalm, all that table that had been set before David and his men, he had made it possible. He had provided the king with supplies while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very rich man. And the king said to Barzillai, come across with me, and I will provide for you while you are with me in Jerusalem. Now, all you people talking about how old you are, I'm not going to say names. This is a verse that you will resonate with. Barzillai said to the king, how long have I got to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am today 80 years old. Can I discern between good and bad? Can I sit like a judge? He said, can your servant taste what I eat? Or what I drink? You give me good food, I can't even taste it. He said, Can I hear any longer the voice of singing men and singing women? I can't even hear the orchestra. He says, why then should your servant be a further burden to my lord the king? Your servant will go a little way across the Jordan with the king. Why should the king repay me with such a reward? I don't want you to reward me. He said, but please let your servant turn back again, that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and mother. But here is your servant, Kimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king, and you do for him what seems good to you. Bless him in my place. Then all the people went over the Jordan. When the king had crossed over, he kissed Barzillai and blessed him. And Barzillai returned to his own place. Point number 7, see the discontent. They've got a great victory. David has come back, going back to Jerusalem with his family. It's a victory, unified country, but there are seeds of discontent. We're still living with the fallout of David's sin with Bathsheba. Now the king went on to Gilgal. That's where Joshua had crossed, and they put a big monument there. And Kimham went on with him, and all the people of Judah escorted the king, and also half the people of Israel. Just then, before we get into that, near Jerusalem, there is actually a town, a place, that is called Keruth Kimham. And it means hospitality shown to Kimham, or the estate given to Kimham. Okay, so traditionally, near Bethlehem, there is an estate called Hospitality Shown Kimham. There is a bar. It's on the map. So did David keep his word? Yes, he did. Just then, the men of Israel, all the men of Israel, you've got about half of the army there, came to the king and said to the king, why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king, his household, and all David's men with him across the Jordan? They've upstayed them. So all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is a close relative of ours, why then are you angry over this matter? Have we ever eaten at the king's expense? Has he ever given us any gift? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah, we have 10 shares in the king. You're one tribe. We're 10 tribes. We had, there was a division now, but totally. We got 10 shares in the king. He said, therefore, we also have more right to David than you. Why then do you despise us? Were we not the first to advise bringing back our king? Is that true? It was. They're the ones who, if David had to send to Judah saying, why don't you call the king to come back? It is true. They were the first. Yet the words of the men of Judah were harsher than the words of the men of Israel. Now, David is a man after God's own heart, but he's still having to deal with the fallout. The personal sins spread to the family. The sins of the family spread to the kingdom. God has restored the kingdom, but the seeds of division are still there. Okay? So we can get forgiven, but we may still have to deal with the consequences. Some people pretend that that's not so. But it is. Okay. Look, you can go out and get drunk and have your hand cut off. You can be forgiven, but you can't be first violin. You following what I'm saying here? Well, what do we do here? Number one, honor the elderly, like David honored Barzillai. We are to honor our father and mother. To honor the elder. Number two, huh? Not that old. Yeah, I don't know exactly how old he would be. He's getting close to the end of his reign. Well, he's getting close to the end of his reign. Yeah, he reigned for 20 years. And I would imagine he was about 30 when he started reigning. So I think maybe 50, somewhere in there, I'm guessing. Yeah, he reigned 40 years, yes. In 33 and 8, or 7. 7 in Hebron, and then 33 in Jerusalem. Yeah. I'd say he's probably about 50, I'm just guessing. All right, number 2. Love your enemies. Show mercy. Bless those who curse you. And do good to those who despitefully use you and persecute you, so that you will be acting as sons and daughters of your Father in heaven. God wants us to reflect His family characteristics. And He is good to the unjust and the evil. He sends His rain and His Son on them. All right, number 3. If you've got a victory in your life, give God the credit. Give God the credit, because that's the reason you're on the planet, glorify God, not self. And finally, remember that sin has consequences. It is spread from David personally to his family to the kingdom. And so remember that ripple effect, all right? We can be forgiven, but we might have to live with the consequences, okay? And in any case, God is good all the time. Let's close with prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the reminder that you were so faithful to David. And we remember him. We remember him as the ancestor of Jesus. And we thank you, Jesus, who loves his enemies and was kind to those who despise him. Help us to have that spirit that was in Jesus as we go through this week. Help us to glorify you. Help us not to take credit for our victories, but to glorify you. And help us to live in such a way that we can point others